And greetings. Welcome. Bienvenido. Hola. Aloha. Ni hao. Okay. Habichiwa. Bonjour, buongiorno. Oh, dear. Good stuff. Ciao, we viva, cat bang. Half a day. Jai Janendra. Shalom.
Shalom. Peace. Now, go vegan.
Peace how?
Go vegan. From the left coast of the genetically mutated McNugget pharmaceutical vivisection prison, military industrial core poor nation, in the cheese-covered post-constitutional banks to bankrupt corruptocracy, mocracy, criminocracy of the United States of Listeria, food born in the U.S. NRA, home of Uncle Salmonella, where we sure do see a lot of people eating a lot of dead animal body parts, and the Wall Street-backed corporate diet of death, disease, and destruction you shove down your throat. This is Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden, broadcasting now for 12 years. We hit our 12th anniversary. We didn't expect to go more than 2 or 3 weeks, considering the content of this program, which would insult most of the advertisers on radio stations, insult all the restaurants and the pharmaceutical companies. But luckily, the people who own the radio stations upon which we broadcast haven't listened to the show yet. We were also heard on Air America. Air America came and went. Now on radio in Southern California, KCAA, AM 1050, Sundays at 1 p.m., KCAAradio.com. And on radio in the San Francisco Bay Area, Sundays at 4 p.m., on KEST, AM 1450, KESTradio.com, and iTunes and TalkStream Live, and on your mobile phone via Stitcher.com/GoVegan. If you register at Stitcher.com/GoVegan, you are in a drawing for $100. And if you listen to a complete program, Go Vegan Radio gets $1. And every dollar counts, because we have to purchase radio airtime every week, as we've been doing for 12 years. And you can hear archives of the program, many, many hundreds available for free at GoVeganRadio.com. Soon to be syndicated by GCN, the Genesis Communications Network, the fastest growing radio network in the world. And today I come to you, I'm hiding under my desk here in the USNRA, the world's most violent nation, trying to avoid all the automatic weapon fire, the drone attacks, bullets from the LAPD. I'm telling you, don't be riding around LA. Trigger happy LAPD cops will mistake your mountain bike for that, you know, the cop killer's gray truck with the ski rack. Be careful. You know, all the while, Obama calls for gun control, when what we really need is drone control to control Obama. And will his proposal for gun control him from his kill list targets? Every week he has a meeting on whom to kill this week. Well, the job of president has certainly evolved in this country, hasn't it? Well, probably Obama's gun control proposal will be written by the NRA, huh? Limiting U.S. citizens to the use of only 10 personal drones, you know, per person. That's it. I mean, who needs more than 10 personal drones? I mean, with 10, you can still engage in the noble American tradition of killing the innocent for fun, known as hunting. Politicians for gun control are always careful to say, oh, none of this is meant to impair hunting. After all, we do want to remain a sociopathic society forever, don't we? And killing for fun is pretty psychotic, but it is profitable, and that's really all that counts. You know, sales of assault weapons are skyrocketing in anticipation of some sort of ban, you know, right, like there will be. Sales of drones are skyrocketing, too. And actually, well, I guess drones are literally skyrockets, aren't they? Well, you are what you eat, and have you ever noticed how violent your plate is? Breakfast, lunch, and dinner, a menu of murder victims. Then we're surprised by all of this violence, murder, killing, torture around us. Huh? You are what you eat. And really, isn't Obama's insistence on indefinite detention of U.S. citizens without charges just another dietary reflection of you are what you eat? All animals are born into indefinite detention. They are innocent. They committed no crime. So that also qualifies them for the death penalty. Yes, all the animals are born into indefinite detention with the death penalty at the end of the road for committing no crime. They're totally innocent, totally harmless. Seriously, indefinite military detention of U.S. citizens without trial is really scary, and Obama just keeps insisting upon it. I mean, wasn't he a constitutional instructor, a professor? It seems like he needs a refresher course. I mean, at this point, I mean, it's almost like, you know, could somebody please introduce him to Monica Lewinsky so we could impeach him, because look at what he's doing to the Constitution here, huh? So, I mean, especially this indefinite military detention of U.S. citizens without a trial. It's so scary because there is an unconstitutional law on the books right now, the Animal Enterprise Terrorism Act, that literally and legally turns animal activists into terrorists if they impair the profits of an animal enterprise. And since this radio program, Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden, opposes all use, exploitation, and profit from animal abuse. Yes, we're against meat, dairy, fish, and egg consumption, and wearing animals, and using them for entertainment, and using them in laboratories. Well, I must warn you, I have to do this official FCC disclaimer that listening to this radio program is a violation of the Animal Enterprise Terrorism Act. So please turn yourself in to the nearest Department of Deutschland Security Office, remember, you may be dangerous, so you should frisk yourself, search yourself, and be forewarned. You may be compassionate also. Well, I guess when the U.S. government isn't detaining citizens for no reason indefinitely, it has to pay some people to look like they're doing something responsibly. And, you know, along comes the EPA now, actually recognizing that climate change exists. And the EPA has just released a 55-page climate change adaptation plan, about which the Environmental Protection Agency has a 60-day public comment period that started this past Friday. The plan is to integrate climate change adaptation into the agency's programs, policies, rules, and operations. Go vegan. This can all start with the EPA cafeteria going vegan. And I wonder if the EPA knows that animal agriculture and the production and consumption of so-called meat, dairy, fish, and eggs accounts for 51%, at least 51%, of all greenhouse gas emissions caused by humankind or humankind. Well, I guess the EPA, if it doesn't know, it will know. I think I'm going to start a petition. This idea is coming to me. I'm going to start a petition. Maybe I can get it together tonight or tomorrow. Or later today, I go lift weights with vegan bodybuilding champion Kenneth D. Williams. Got me on an exercise regimen, but after that I should have the energy to get the petition together. Petition to tell the EPA to advise America to go vegan to save us from climate change. And if you want to be involved with the petition, be my friend on Facebook. I think I'm being told by my handlers now to advise you to go to the Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden fan page as opposed to the Bob Linden pages, which both have been maxed out at 5,000. We're just going to try to do everything with this egomaniacal fan page. So it's Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. Also, on Twitter, you can follow me, stalk me on Twitter at Go Vegan Radio, and I'll keep you up to date on the petition that we're going to put together. The EPA, I'll still be a few more minutes, Joe, here. I just want to talk about the EPA adaptation plan. Quote, will seek to identify where its climate adaptation activities might have the greatest impact on protecting human health and the environment, replicate its successes, and identify areas needing improvement, end quote. Vegan. This ongoing process of evaluation and learning is consistent with EPA's commitment to transparency and accountability. So we're going to want to make sure that the EPA lets everybody know that we are lobbying it to get behind going vegan to address climate change. In its plan, the EPA notes that during the past 50 years, average temperatures across the U.S. have risen more than 2 degrees Fahrenheit, while precipitation has increased about 5%. The precipitation trends are toward more frequent and intense heavy downpours, the kind that cause flooding, runoff of pollutants and pathogens into rivers and streams and sewer systems to overflow. Also, during the past 50 years, sea level has risen up to 8 inches in some U.S. coastal areas. Quote, in the United States, temperatures are expected to warm substantially over the 21st century under all projections of future climate change. These changes pose risks for a wide range of human and environmental systems, including public health, the quality of the air we breathe and the water we drink, freshwater resources, the coastal environment, wildlife and ecosystems, infrastructure, economic activity, cultural resources, and social well-being. Are all of these worth it because you want to have your slab of decomposing flesh? Because, it tastes good? It's okay with you? Yeah, right. And you know what? It doesn't even taste good, the meat you're eating, without ketchup or mayonnaise or gravy or barbecue sauce. Is saving the environment, the country, the planet, worth it to you? Yeah, but it tastes good. I like the taste of my meat and my bovine mammary secretion. So let there be superstorms and hurricanes and tornadoes and flooding and drought and wildfires because, ketchup tastes good. And meat and dairy, fish and egg production and consumption cause at least 51% of all greenhouse gas emissions. The EPA has outlined 5 major goals. Goal 1, taking action on climate change and improving air quality. EPA interests are pollution prevention, energy efficiency, pollution from vehicles and engines, radon, acid rain, indoor and outdoor air quality. So the EPA, though, is thinking about climate change. The EPA says increased tropospheric ozone concentrations due to climate change pose a public health burden from air pollution that could lead to more respiratory illness and premature death. Particulate matter levels are likely to rise because of wildfires. And ask anybody who lives near a dairy farm how easy it is to breathe there. Huh? Ask the children in California's San Joaquin Valley. Climate change may worsen the quality of indoor air. More precipitation, more mold, increased temperatures will bring the emergence of new biological and pathogenic infectious agents, shifting patterns of indoor pesticide use. As more residents weatherize buildings for comfort, there's less opportunity for ventilation and more exposure to indoor environmental pollutants. You didn't know that eating meat, dairy, fish, and eggs caused all this, did you? Well, it does. Your meat eating is messing up everything, isn't it? And, I don't care if children, develop respiratory illness. My meat tastes so good. EPA goal 2, protecting America's water. Okay. Now, I know, since animal agriculture is responsible for half of all water usage and half of all water pollution, certainly we can convince the EPA to advise America to go vegan to save us from climate change, right? Now, take another sip of agricultural runoff chemicals, pesticides, antibiotics. Oh, but I digress. And by the way, while environmentalists digress by saying divest, that's kind of another crazy diversionary detour from the real solution. Yeah, take your school's money out of investing in oil companies, right? So those oil companies, they'll make it back and then some by jacking up the price 10 cents a gallon, and you'll pay it on your way to a rally to divest when you should be rallying to get everyone to go vegan to save us from climate change. And what is your meat, dairy, fish, and egg eating cause climate change doing in the area of water? Well, the EPA notes that climate change alters the hydrological cycle. Changes have already been observed and are expected to continue, such as warming air and water, changes in the location and amount of rain and snow, increased intensity of rainfall and tropical storms, sea level rise, changes in ocean chemistry, and indirect effects related to energy generation and fuel production. Higher air and water temperatures will increase pollutant concentrations and lower dissolved oxygen levels, meaning drinking water reservoirs would become impaired, not meeting water quality standards. And higher air and water temperatures combined with nutrient pollution will increase the incidence of harmful algae blooms, threatening ecosystems and public health. Holy cow, the nightmare your meat and dairy eating is causing, it's causing animals today is leading to the nightmares for all of humanity coming soon to your life if you don't go vegan. And, you know, it's not about blame. It's about taking responsibility. I don't want sea levels to rise, but what? Give up my cheese? Okay, continue to eat your meat, dairy, fish, and eggs, and, you know, when sea levels rise, and you don't have a drop of water to wash down that decomposing carcass that you just swallowed, the EPA says, quote, sea level rise could affect water infrastructure, including drinking water intakes and wastewater outfalls, and could push saline water into coastal aquifers. Climate change will affect the quality and availability of drinking water supplies. Climate change produces increased growth of algae, microbes, invasive species in the water supply. It's a total mess. And it's all because you're eating that hamburger. It's all because you're going to your slash food restaurant, McDevil's, Burger King, Wendy's, Bill's Jr., Up Chuck E. Cheese, Skin and Snout. Got it. We got to stop it. You know, there's a lot more to this EPA plan of climate change. We won't go into it now, but if the EPA is serious and it wants to be informed about what it can do and what the citizenry can do, I do suggest that the EPA and you will take into consideration the report from the World Bank, the United Nations agency whose climate experts produced Livestock and Climate Change. What if the key actors in climate change are cows, pigs, and chickens? That's written by Jeff Anhang and Robert Goodland. And also go to the website, chompingclimatechange.org. Chompingclimatechange.org. Okay, we're going to save the planet, and we're going to do it by going vegan. And please support this program, because I don't think you've heard much of this information elsewhere in the media. And we do have to pay for airtime. We're listener-supported. Make a tax-deductible donation by clicking donate at goveganradio.com. You can also advertise your vegan and cruelty-free products and services. Email me. It's Bob at goveganradio.com. Coming up on the program, we will talk to Jamie Scott, a veterinary student who had, well, she had her own nightmares of her own, and we look for creating a solution from the problems that she encountered in veterinary school. Coming up today on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden.
With over 200 restaurants around the globe, Loving Hut is the largest chain of independently owned vegan restaurants worldwide. The first one in North America is in Milpitas, California, at 516 Barber Lane. Stanford University students and faculty enjoy Loving Hut at 165 University Avenue in Palo Alto. There are three Loving Hut locations in San Francisco, one in Elk Grove and one in San Jose. For the Loving Hut near you, visit lovinghut.us. You'll find Loving Hut restaurants throughout Southern California, too. And in the Inland Empire, there's a Loving Hut in Claremont and in Upland. Many of the goodies at Viva La Vegan Grocery in Rancho Cucamonga are from the bakery at Loving Hut Upland. The people at Loving Hut are on a mission to save your health, save the animals, and save the planet from climate change and other environmental disasters caused by meat, dairy, fish, and egg consumption. Who knew that saving the planet would be so delicious? Save the planet. Eat at Loving Hut. Move over dairy. Make way for creamy goodness from coconut cow. Real food, real nutrition from coconut cow. Coconut yogurt, cultured fermented creamed coconut meat. A treat by itself or with fresh fruit. Coconut cream, a vegan's dream for baking instead of butter. Raw coconut water, coconut milk for smoothies. Coconut kefir, mango lassi. Visit coconutcowcafe.com. Organic, gluten-free nutrition from coconut cow. No fumigated coconuts from Thailand are ever used by coconut cow. Also try coconut cow fermented sweet potatoes and sweet potatoes with mango, artisan sauerkraut, and kombucha. Available at Viva La Vegan Grocery, Rancho Cucamonga, and Grassroots Natural Market and Kitchen, South Pasadena. Shipping available. Call 626-993-5631. CoconutCowCafe.com.
It's Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. GoVeganRadio.com. Thank you for joining us today. We are now in our 13th year of broadcasting. Our mission is, it's in the title of the program, Go Vegan. We would like you to go vegan and do your part for the environment, and that would be doing your part to combat world hunger, disease, and animal suffering. Our guest on today's program, Jamie Scott, is someone who wanted to address animal suffering by becoming a veterinarian. She applied to an offshore veterinary school. She had some conditions that she wanted met in order for her to attend. And so it should be a happy story, Jamie going off to school, becoming a veterinarian, and now helping animals. But that's not exactly what happened, Jamie, is it? Jamie Scott, welcome to Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. How are you today?
I'm fine. Thank you for having me.
Thanks,
no, I did not go happily off to a vet school. I got there, and, you know, it's in a nice warm climate, and I was being around on my first day of school, and I met a herd of wild donkeys, a herd of local sheep, and a herd of stray dogs that had been gathered up and were going to be used that semester in the required mandatory terminal surgeries that you have to perform before you graduate. So I spent, instead of 3.5 years learning how to save animals, I spent 3.5 years learning about the legal system and how to try to fight to end terminal surgeries and bring educating veterinarians into a new millennium and treating all animals as important, not just those that have a checkbook attached to them, which is unfortunately what a lot of veterinarians are taught. The only important animals are those that are willing to pay.
So tell us, you applied to this offshore veterinary school, and in advance you had some conditions in mind, right? You discussed them?
I flat out ask, do you require terminal surgeries? Because most vet schools have an alternative and a terminal program. So I flat out asked. I don't have a problem with, you know, asking a question. And they said there are a few, but they are not required, meaning they are in an elective program. So I made sure before I applied and left everything to fly 3,000 miles from home that I was going to a program that met my ethical conditions. And it did not. But they wanted my tuition, so they told me it would.
So you paid your tuition, and then you're there. And how did you find out that you had to participate in what you find unethical?
The student that was showing us around, the tour guide, introduced us to the animals and told us that these weren't the animals, of course, we were going to use because they would be dead by the end of first semester, but we would be getting our own in 3 years when we hit sixth and seventh semester. I was introduced to the new animals that were acquired, and it kind of shocked me. So I started writing and calling everybody saying, you know, you promised me an alternative program. You promised that I wouldn't. And in fact, they actually promised me that really there was nothing going on at the school at all, except for these few surgeries. And I never got any response, so then it became a big legal and media battle between me versus this university, which ended with me going off to Colorado for my final year. You leave the offshore school and you go to a local school to use their clinical facilities for your last year. And in my very, very last semester of school, 16 weeks from graduating, I am failed out for, well, they say I broke policies, but when I ask for a copy of these policies, they're not written down. These policies don't exist. I was just failed for being in the wrong place at the wrong time and for appearing on, I actually appear on PETA's website as it looks and appears like I work for them, which I've never worked for any acronym-named organization out there, but once you're on basically an animal rights hit list, vet schools do not like animal rights activists. They do not like animal rights students because they use a lot of animals people don't know about. And they do a lot of things behind closed doors people don't know about. So once I hit their website, I became a target. And there was absolutely no way I was going to ever graduate as a veterinarian. And I still have one semester to finish. That I can't.
You have one semester to finish and you can't. Well, take us back to the beginning of your veterinary education. So you went to this offshore school. You've asked me not to name the school for legal purposes. Is that I'm not supposed to name the school?
Okay. Yeah, my attorney negotiated an agreement which got her legal fees paid. I was supposed to get a sanctuary for my surgical animals. Any animal that I used was supposed to be left alone and left to live out their lives, which did not happen. They were all sent to slaughter. Nobody ever thought I'd find out, but I became friends with one of the locals, and they told me exactly what happened.
Tell us, what is terminal surgery? I mean, what is that about?
A terminal surgery is a surgery in which an animal goes into a surgical procedure with no intention of ever waking it up. You go in, you put the animal under anesthesia, you do whatever it is you're going to do, and you euthanize without ever waking the animal up. And most animals that are used, they kind of, the reasoning behind it is most students are taught that you can't learn without killing an animal, without that hands-on experience. You can't learn anything. And these animals were going to die anyway, because most of them are either purchased from a Class A dealer, which is a dealer that breeds for the purpose of selling to a laboratory or an educational facility, or a Class B dealer, which goes to the shelters and picks up those that are going to be euthanized at the end of the day anyway, and that's how they justify using them. But a terminal surgery is a surgery that an animal doesn't need, and they have no intention of ever waking them up. They're just used for education.
It's not helping the animals who have some physical problem. It's
no.
Rounded up animals from shelters. And did you say local animals, herds of animals?
It depends on where you're from. Like in the United States, there's two types of dealers, Class A and Class B. Class A will breed their animals, and then there's something called a cadaver farm where they actually breed animals to euthanize and make them into cadavers for medical training. There's Class B dealers, which pick them up from shelters or wherever they can find them for cheap or for free and sell them. And then there are other countries which they will pay people to go out and find animals. Stray dogs, Mexico, stray cats are used and then shipped up to the United States to be used as cadavers in undergrad biology classes. So it really depends on where you are. But these are animals that have no home, have no owner, and have no voice and no chance of saying anything. They're picked up, and because animals are considered property, they're sold off as property, much as a textbook or a pencil or a notebook or anything else. That's what they're sold as. So it depends on where you are, but animals will be picked up in other countries off the street. And in the United States, they're a little more regulated, but it's still animals are picked up from shelters, and animals are bred specifically to die.
Well, animals never have owners. They have guardians and caretakers. But how do they own? You know, that again, that turns them into property. So what sort of surgeries are you doing then? You have, the animals rounded up from shelters or the island, and what are you supposed to do? What's the procedure, and then what happens?
Depends on the animals, depends on the school. I can tell you the few that I remember. We did joint taps. I can definitely remember using a sheep for something called an H-plasty, which is an old-school method of removing a tumor. They spray paint a dot on the side of the animal, and then you cut a square around into the skin and extend the incision mark to make an H, and you pull the skin together, and that's how you remove a tumor. It's kind of an old-school method, but again, the sheep doesn't want to have its skin cut off and sewn together. I can't remember. The donkey, we had to locate a nerve. I remember that one. You basically anesthetize the donkey. You cut into the leg, you locate a nerve, you say, there it is, and then you sew the leg back up. Completely pointless, because you're never going to do any of these things.
And then the donkey is killed. Everybody's killed in this.
At the end of the procedures, I know Colorado State uses piglets. At the end of, they kind of bring them all in, you use them for that day, and then they're killed. There's no, hey, we're going to wake up and have a great day or anything, or these stray dogs or the homeless dogs picked up from the islands or picked up from the street or picked up from the shelter. It's not, we're going to go and we're going to be used for some kind of education, but, then we're going to go home with somebody at the end of the day and be a pet and get a Christmas gift and all that. That's not going to happen. You live out your life in a cage. You maybe get visited, depending on which program you're in, by a student or two or a caretaker, and then you live to die. You've got 4 months of whatever, depending on, again, the university. Some schools just pick them up that day, take them from the shelter, use them in whatever they're going to do, and kill them that day. Others spend four months waiting.
In order to learn to heal animals, we have to kill animals. So for the animals' own good, we wind up killing them to learn how to treat them. It seems kind of bizarre. Mm-hmm. So what happened with you then on the island there? You were then promised that some animals would go to a sanctuary. I mean, what?
The animals were supposed to, if I didn't throw a fit during the procedures, if I maintained my composure during these obviously stupid procedures, I mean, none of them are anything that 99% of people are ever going to do again. I guarantee you I'm never going to do an H-plasty on a sheep again. If I didn't pitch fit,
the animals would
go to a sanctuary and live out their lives.
Yeah. I wonder how many veterinarians have located a certain nerve on a donkey, either as part of what might be necessary in daily practice.
I would challenge you to find 1,000 to call in and say, oh, yeah, I just cut the leg to make sure the nerve was still there. I would challenge you to find 10 people who do that just for kicks. That just doesn't happen.
Ridiculous. Okay, so you promised the animals would go to a sanctuary then, and then that also didn't. It seems like all broken promises here for you.
There's a lot of deception going on, not just, you expect the school to lie to you, but I was deceived by my own attorney. So anybody who wants to go into any of these kind of legal battles, try and get a hold of me, because I'll tell you exactly what they're going to say to you and exactly what they're going to do to you. Because there's a lot of lying, there's a lot of deception, there's a lot of, if you just do this, you're going to get this, and everything is going to be wonderful. And they kind of expect, I think most people, they believe their attorneys and whatnot, and they believe people who are being paid to teach them, and they don't go after a sheep. I went after a sheep and a donkey, and I spent a semester searching an island to find a sheep, and people thought I was insane, because who's going to go around looking for, as everyone called it, some stupid sheep? It's supposed to be a food source, and yet I did, and so they really didn't expect that I would go to the lengths that I went to find out what happened. But to make sure that these animals were living in a nice little location. I mean, I wasn't going to do anything. If they had a great home, that was it. But I went to greater lengths to find out exactly what happened. And I found out that they went to slaughter.
So the animals who were, you were promised would go to a sanctuary instead went to slaughter. You thought the tails were raised by your attorney in a contract, but you didn't see the wording in the contract that satisfied you, and everything went wrong, including now you have, what, one semester to finish to become a veterinarian, and you're kind of out in the cold, so I don't know if how you might be helped by anyone in our listening audience to help complete your veterinary school. But the other thing is, I imagine people would say, well, Jamie Scott, how are you supposed to learn, you know, how to treat animals if you don't have hands-on experience cutting them open? Or, you know, I mean, what the, how would you get your education if not for chopping up animals?
How do you do it? And my argument is I think there are 28 vet schools in the U.S., and most of them have two programs. There's the alternative program, which does not kill animals, and there's the traditional road, which does. If you're able to educate, have your students in the alternative program, and they graduate as a DVM, a doctor of veterinary medicine, why can't you train all of them in the same manner? And there are vet schools out there, such as Western, which is in Pomona, California, which does not use animals, yet they still manage to train classes of 50 students every year and graduate them. And a lot of people got on me saying that, you know, an alternative program, all we're going to use is computers and models and books. I'm like, oh, no, I've never said that students shouldn't work on live animals. I say they should use animals that need it. Spays and neuters, animals that need an amputation, animals that need mass removals. We just open it up to the community and say, you know what? We'll do it for you for free or just at cost. We just need the animals to learn on. And that would, you know, give you all the experience you need in soft tissue handling. That's all you require is basically doing a bunch of spays and neuters. And as far as the anatomy part of training, which is your first and second semester where they bring in cadavers, they're all willed body programs where animals die and owners give them over to the school, and that works kind of okay, but you're not guaranteed you're going to get enough animals, and you're not going to guaranteed you're going to get the right kind of animals. And schools want uniformity. All the animals weigh about the same. They look about the same, and they're all supposed to have perfect anatomy. So what I would like to do is create the perfect model, and I have on paper created it and contacted the right people who make models for Hollywood movies and ask them, can I make the perfect model? Can I make the perfect dog where you take everything from the skin down to the bones, the organs, everything, and it's all perfect, it's all 100% accurate. You can open the heart, you can open a kidney, you can see every feature you need, and then you put it back together again like a Mr. Potato Head, pop it together, and it's 100% perfect. And they said, absolutely, we can make it for you. It's going to cost $250,000 just to make the mold, but we can make this, and it can be something that can be sold to all schools. And there are models out there before everybody calls me and tells me there are already models. There are various degrees of models. Most of them can be argued against that they're not realistic enough, and you're not going to get the detail you need. And the ones I've used, kind of, they're right. They aren't very good. And anybody who's creating better models is charging way too much that universities will never go for it. Why pay $10,000 for a model when you can pay $25 for a dead dog? It doesn't make any fiscal sense for a university. So I do have a plan to make a model and have approached every group that I can think of on the planet for funding and haven't gotten it yet. But I do have the ability to do it.
$250,000 to make the most intricate model yet made. HSUS, the Humane Society of the United States, has $200 million in the bank, and it receives $120 million in donations every year. I would imagine that it would want to help, save so many lives with a model like this, and that would exclude
you.
Would
wouldn't you?
Right. So did you ask HSUS to help?
I did. I tried to get in contact with their boss, Wayne Pacelli, and never got any kind of response from him. I did get pushed down to somebody, and I can't remember her name. She's head of, like, their alternative and product development area department. And I spent an hour on the phone with her, and she liked the idea. She was for it, but she said that kind of money, they will never give it up. And I told her that the business plan, I mean, I'm not a business person. I have no idea what I'm doing when it comes to business, but I did come up with a business plan that the initial investment, as we sell the models, whatever they cost, I don't know what they cost to actually make the models and pull them from the mold. I've never gotten that response back from the companies. But whatever they cost, we sell slightly above that cost, so that they can be affordable for the universities and the students even themselves. We take that, they recoup their initial investment of $250,000 and whatever else it costs to pull the models. Then after the fact, they no longer have to do any work. I do it all. I get them into the universities. They continue to receive 10% of net profits and can use it in any kind of advertisements that they want, that they support this, and here's our model, they can do that. And so I never had asked them to just give me money and that would be the end of it. I did ask them to invest, and they would recoup it and continue to recoup after the fact, and this would begin the changing of veterinary training. It would start with the models, and then we move up to completely ending terminal surgeries by funding spay-neuter clinics for the schools, giving each school an allotted amount of money. I asked a friend of mine who does spay-neuters specifically, and he said if each vet school got $1 million a year from HSUS, which would be, I think there are 28 vet schools, there might be 33 now, I'm not positive, but let's say that's $30 million, they end up funding every vet school's spay-neuter program and ending terminal surgeries completely. So they still have $100 million a year to work with in donations.
Well, and again, with $200 million in the bank, that's a fifth of a billion. So, I mean, if $30 million to them, they'd have,
$170 million still left in the bank, and that's only for 1 year.
Right. I mean, you know, and actually Wayne Pacelli, the CEO, could pay for your model out of 1 year's salary and still have a considerable amount of money left over to...
Yeah.
Well, maybe we have some people with the entrepreneurial spirit in the audience who may want to help, because this really does sound like a life-saving venture. Can't imagine why HSUS wouldn't get behind it. Maybe we need to start lobbying HSUS to support you. Well, how would people support you or get in touch and, you know, start a dialogue on the creation of this model to replace the real
people
living?
Try email me, and I don't check my email regularly. I don't have internet access where I am at the moment, so when I check it, if I don't contact you for a couple of weeks, not that I'm ignoring you, but I haven't checked my email. And I can give out my phone number, too. I don't mind calling.
Okay, well,
I won't answer, but leave a message.
Let's hear your email and phone number.
Okay, my email address is ahomeforallanimals, one word, @gmail.com.
Ahomeforallanimals @gmail.com.
Ahomeforallanimals. Everything is letters. There's no numbers. And then my phone number is 720-878-5788. And it's a cell, so you can text me, and then I'd be more likely to answer if it's somebody I recognize.
Okay, so you can call or text 720-878-5788. We need to take a break. I'd like to spend a few more minutes with you on air, Jamie, so if you can hold on through the break. We will continue on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. If you missed any of the discussion, programs are archived at goveganradio.com. And please support us with a tax-deductible donation. We only have $200 million to go before we can match the bank account of HSUS, so we need your support. You can click donate at goveganradio.com or advertise your vegan and cruelty-free products by emailing me. It's Bob @goveganradio.com.
grocery store that's 100% vegan. And not just that, the largest vegan grocery anywhere? It's Viva La Vegan, 9456 Roberts Street, Rancho Cucamonga. Thousands and thousands of items, everything vegan, everything cruelty-free. No animal ingredients, no animal testing. Viva La Vegan Grocery. Organic produce, fruits, vegetables, nuts, grains, seeds. And introducing Veganic. Want to go beyond organic? Coming soon to Viva La Vegan. Thousands of grocery items, some you won't see anywhere else. Fresh juice from the juicer at Viva La Vegan Grocery. Donuts, cupcakes, supplements, gluten-free. Viva La Vegan, raw foods, vegan dog food, household items, personal care, books, belts, shoes. They all come together at the largest vegan grocery anywhere. Great prices, friendly staff, thousands of items, everything vegan at Viva La Vegan. 9456 Roberts Street, R-O-B-E-R-D-S, Rancho Cucamonga, California, 909-941-4495. VivaLaVeganGrocery.com, 909-941-4495. Viva La Vegan. Your support of the International Fund for Africa goes to direct aid for human babies and animals in need in Africa. Compassion for all beings is exemplified by the work of the International Fund for Africa, delivering critically needed medical services from the introduction of neonatal care in Ethiopia to the Homeless Animals Project for dogs, from the Rural Health and Development Project to the Veterinary Medicine Hospital Project, and promoting veganism as the best way to help people, animals, and the environment of Africa, the International Fund for Africa is leading the way. Its dynamic president, Dr. Antenna Roba, is a Houston emergency room physician who sees the deadly health effects of the standard African-American diet of animal products, and then goes home to Africa to witness the deadly environmental effects of the standard African-American diet there, as meat and dairy-based climate change devastates the continent. The message from the International Fund for Africa is, go vegan, Africa. No GMOs, no factory farms. Find out how you can help the International Fund for Africa help people and animals in Africa. Visit iFundAfrica.org. Stop starvation. Save the environment. Visit iFundAfrica.org.
It's Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. GoVeganRadio.com. There'll be a Bay Area protest against the Keystone XL pipeline next Sunday. That's a week from today, Sunday, February 17th. From 1 to 3 p.m., when demonstrators will surround the U.S. State Department office encircling One Market Plaza in San Francisco. There'll be speakers and brass bands and street theater, all in opposition to the Keystone XL pipeline stretching from Alberta, Canada, to the U.S. Gulf Coast, where the environment is the victim and the State Department is the one responsible for this because of the international implications of the pipeline. So, again, that's next Sunday, February 17th, 1 to 3 p.m., One Market Plaza in San Francisco. It's coming up on Valentine's Day. Are you looking for love in all the wrong places? Yeah, you should be going to the shelter. Adopt. That's where the real love is. And today we're talking to Jamie Scott. We have another just a couple of minutes left. Jamie Scott, a veterinary student who went off to an offshore school. She was promised she wouldn't have to take part in terminal surgery, and then found out she had to do that, and has had a nightmare and has been unable to graduate. She has one more semester to go, but the politics of being an animal rights advocate in as a veterinary student seem to seem to have bitten her. So, Jamie, you're now trying to raise $250,000 to create a model that could be used in veterinary schools to replace the live animals, the animals who are killed, the animals who would be cadavers that are used, who are used. Well, I mean, cutting into an animal, you said previously that it's not such a good education because you've compared it to cutting into a steak, where it maybe wouldn't be so educational.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, when you get a cadaver is obviously a dead animal, generally a dog in veterinary school, a cat if you're in biology and an undergrad, a four-year school. And these animals have been frozen or kept in very, very cold refrigerators. So your first day, at least for me, with the dog is you're hacking away at the skin. You're skinning the animal. You never learn the layers of skin, so that's a waste. And their argument is you start learning how to use your instruments right away. Well, these animals have been dead for a while. They're injected with latex, and they're kept in very cold refrigerators, if not freezers. So you're cutting into them, and I would equate it to when I've actually cut into live tissue to do spays and neuters. That's a very fine surgery. So, yeah, it's like taking a steak out of the freezer and cutting it, and you've got to use extreme force to get through the muscle versus, say, a fresh piece of steak. And I'm sorry, vegans everywhere, I'm equating everything to a steak, but we've all seen meat cuts. When you take a fresh piece of meat and you jab a steak knife into it to cut it, it goes right through. So when you come off of hacking through muscle, trying to get down to the nerves and to the organs, you're not learning any kind of fine tissue handling. You're learning how to be a butcher, and then you go into trying to work on animals. And the most common thing I heard from the students, because the program did change, and we weren't using live dogs when it was time to go in to do our first spay, I went through school, because things were starting to change at my insistence and everyone else's. And they all said, all these students I was listening, oh, I was an animal that didn't have to live, so I could practice on that one first before I actually had to work on an animal that has to survive. That was what the valedictorian of the class was saying, and I was over it, was hearing him. And I'm like, it has nothing, you don't learn anything from those cadavers. The cadavers are, you're learning how to butcher through muscle. And then throughout the course of a semester, and a semester is 4 months, the animal starts to deteriorate. Naturally, animals are just like people. When you die, you rot. And so then you become a biohazard. And you go into these freezers, and there are pieces of animals. There's parts everywhere. You're sloshing around in mud, dirt, blood, you know, embalming fluid, whatever else happens to be used. You're formaldehyde, you're sloshing around in all this stuff, and you can't go back. After you've learned the animal and taken a test, you can't go back and use it again. It's in the garbage.
Right, right,
right. So the model then...
We're running out of time here. So once again, you're trying to get the model together that would be an improvement in the instruction of anatomy to veterinary students, and you're trying to raise funds for that. In 30 seconds, did you have any recourse when you were in veterinary school? Was there any organization who could help you as a veterinary student with your problems? We only have 30 seconds.
There was an Association of Veterinarians for Animal Rights, or AVAR, which was bought out during my lawsuit by HSUS and became what is now HSVMA, Humane Society of Veterinary Medical Association. And they do not promote ending terminals. So if students are having a problem, there is nothing out there that I am aware of any longer. AVAR was it, and now AVAR is gone. So really, it's me or contacting other people who've been through it.
Okay. And, again, maybe we should contact Wayne Pacelli to finance your model since... and again, Jamie's number is 720-878-5788, 720-878-5788. Text or email, and just tell us your email one more time.
ahomeforallanimals@gmail.com.
Thanks, Jamie Scott, for being with us on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden.
Thank you.